Secretary of Homeland Security Janet Napolitano. I know there's been a lot of concern about airline safety following the attempted bombing on Christmas Day. And as you also know, your government is very good at anticipating these events after they occur. For example, in response to the shoe bomber, everyone was required to remove their shoes before entering a plane. In response to the attempt with liquids, we limited everyone to 3 ounces. So I am here tonight to announce the following changes in response to the Christmas Day attempt. Okay. First of all, because the bomber was seated in 19F, we are removing seat 19F from all planes. Because the bomber hid explosives in his underwear, we are forbidding underwear. And there will no longer be one of those onboard channels that shows the flight pattern. As a matter of fact, we will no longer tell anyone where a flight is going at all. You'll simply get on the plane and take your chances. Of course, the good news is the terrorists will be just as confused as you are. And of course, we've got some new scanning equipment. Now, the bad news is you're going to have to go through the scanner naked. The good news is this will be considered an MRI under Obamacare. And there will be a $15 copay. Now, of course, we're also going to try to get better at anticipating these events. We're not going to profile exactly, but we are going to look for subtle clues. I see we have a teaching moment here. All right. Excuse me. Has anyone unknown to you given you anything to carry on this flight?
Unknown?
No, we knew him.
I think my work here is done. Thank you.
Strangers on your flight might cause a scare. Well, it is just not right. They seized my hair gel.
We could get jihad before the flight is through. Hear the liberals say, you can't profile them, we'll pass TSA with just a smile then.
As they stop some nuns and make them all get nude.
Strangers on your flight, are you concerned that we're a danger to your flight?
Hey Ahmed, do you think my new explosive rig makes my butt look big?
Honestly, your derriere looks smoking in that underwear.
And every single flight, each time you travel, be prepared to fight should things unravel.
Where did we fly from? You'll hear it when we hum.
Hit it.
Dubai, Dubai, do. Dubai.
Dubai, Dubai, do is where we flew through.
Hey, Ahmed, what will happen to us now?
Though I lit a bomb and burnt my tukus, that is not the charge on which they'll book us.
Now we're facing life for smoking on a flight.
Thanks for returning to Great Speeches and Interviews on Axis Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman. If you're just joining us, we're listening to Gandhi's Grandson, Warning of World War III. Arunda Gandhi is interviewed by David Swanson. You can hear this program at 96.5 FM in the Sacramento area, or you can go to accesssacramento.org, or you can download it from greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com.
Uh,
it's just become sort of routine. It's more normal to be at war than to not be at war. And if you and they're just sort of adding another country or two to the ones we're at war with. Have people largely accepted that as normal?
Yeah, like I said, people are so involved in their own affairs and in their own lives, and wanting more and more of the things that are produced, that they feel that the government has to protect them and protect their possessions and all that. And so if that means getting rid of the bad guys, then get rid of the bad guys. But, and that is the second biggest tragedy, that we have been fed with this myth that the world is made up of good guys and bad guys. And if we get rid of all the bad guys, that we will be left with a world full of good guys. And that is a myth, because each one of us is capable of being good or bad depending on what buttons are pressed. So what are we going to do? Annihilate the entire humanity? There is no such thing as good guys and bad guys.
I think that is a critical point, but one very hard for people to understand. I'm told you cannot reason with Muslim extremists. They only understand violence. But I could certainly...
I think that is wrong. I think, anybody, if we talk to them kindly and nicely and reason with them, they will listen to us. But, we have become very good crisis managers. When we allow a conflict to become a crisis, and then we want to find a solution, and at that time the government very conveniently tells us that the only solution is to fight them and destroy them, and we accept that. Now that is crisis management. But if we had the foresight to look at situations before they became a crisis and nip it in the bud, then we wouldn't have to use military and force and war to put an end to all of these things.
And what do you think drives the refusal to engage in serious foreign aid and diplomacy and arms embargoes of the sort that would quite easily avert these crises?
Well, right from the beginning, we did nothing to discuss this or try to find a solution. It was always aggressive attitude, that's got us in this mess. When you talk of diplomacy, it can't be aggressive. Diplomacy should be diplomacy. It should involve a dialogue, a friendly dialogue between two people, and a reasonable dialogue. And that doesn't happen because we are so governed by international relationships. Now, in this Palestinian crisis, in the Gaza crisis, when our Secretary of State was trying to negotiate to bring about peace there, we didn't talk with the ruling party in Gaza, because Israel considers them to be terrorists, and we consider them to be terrorists, and we don't negotiate with terrorists. So then how do you bring about a peaceful resolution if you already brand people as terrorists and refuse to talk to them?
It's an excellent question. We are speaking with Arun Gandhi, who is the author, among other books, of a new children's book, Grandfather Gandhi, about his grandfather. Arun, the pairing of militarism and materialism strikes me because Dr. King famously put three words into that sort of talk: militarism, materialism, and racism. Is that third of less importance, do you think?
No, I don't think it's less important, but I think what has happened is, we have looked at racism in isolation, and I don't think racism can be isolated, because racism is a byproduct of prejudices, and prejudices exist in every one of us, whichever race we belong to. Every human being has prejudices. There are good prejudices and bad prejudices, and in everything we tend to focus more on the bad. And so racism is a byproduct of that bad prejudice. So if we want to put an end to racism, we have to first of all acknowledge our own prejudices and try to put an end to those prejudices, and only then will racism be eliminated. But racism and prejudice is the attitudinal problem. It's not a legal problem. You can pass civil rights laws and enable integration of people, but you can't force people to change their attitude and begin to love and respect each other by law. That can happen only through education and through reaching out and causing that kind of an atmosphere where people will not hate you anymore, but would, you know, respect you.
That would be a huge improvement, and we have seen it in some places. I think we see it in other places superficially, and without real content.
Because you know we really don't acknowledge and attack our prejudices. As I said, all of us have prejudices, whichever race or nation or wherever we come from. We all have prejudices, and unfortunately, we become victims of the bad prejudices of people.
The Prime Minister of India, Narendra Modi, visited the United States recently, and he went to the Martin Luther King Memorial in Washington and the Gandhi Memorial in Washington, and he co-authored an op-ed in the Washington Post with President Obama about loving cooperative joint military exercises between the United States and India, exactly. Among other things. What do you make of the politics of India these days?
Well, that's the tragedy. You know, we have right from even before independence was granted to us, the politicians, they told my grandfather that now we are not following you. You go your way and we are going our way. And they had rejected nonviolence as their philosophy. And so, you know, they went into militarism. And now we have to just go on increasing that because we have this so-called justification that we cannot get along with our neighbor. And you know, it's actually the politicians on both sides who see the wisdom in keeping this pot boiling so that they can control the people and spend more money on military and weapons than on bringing about a better life for the people. Now, in India, for instance, half of the population of India lives in abject poverty. So what is the government doing about it, and why are they spending so much money on military instead of spending on people?
A lot of us in recent months have started a new project called World Beyond War with a website, worldbeyondwar.org, and we've been advancing this argument that war is costing us economically when we need that money for the environment, for people, for starvation and healthcare, and it's costing us in terms of civil liberties and morality and life and limb, and there's no upside, and we ought to be working to abolish it. And people, thousands of people have signed on from, I think, 84 countries so far, so there's some level of popularity, but many tell us it's absurd, it's not worth even thinking about now. We sadly have war, and it's here to stay. Do you?
I think that is absurd.
You do?
I think that is absolutely absurd. Human beings, especially civilized human beings, cannot be thinking in such negative terms. That's not civilization. What we are talking about is brutal, it's inhuman, and it's not a civilized way of living. Civilized way of living is living with compassion and love and respect for each other and trying to help each other. And I feel that this beginning, World Beyond War, is a wonderful beginning, and I hope it succeeds, and eventually all of us get involved in it and really show that we are civilized human beings. Civilization doesn't mean richness. It doesn't mean having all the material benefits and a rich way of life. Civilization is what kind of a relationship do you have with your fellow human being, wherever they are.
Well, we certainly will appreciate all the advice and assistance you can offer, and everything that you have long been doing to advance nonviolence. We have just a couple of minutes left. What advice do you offer to people who want to do what they can with what time they have to avert the danger you have pointed out of a third world war?
I think that we all need to change you know, look at our own weaknesses and transform those weaknesses into strength. And that is why Grandfather talked about becoming the change you wish to see in the world. Unfortunately, what happens is that we don't want to change, but we want everybody else to change. And so nobody changes. But if we all begin collectively to change our attitudes and our understanding and our relationships, then we will be able to make a difference in the world. It's also important for us to remember that peace doesn't mean the absence of war. We have to understand that we commit violence in many different ways, not just the physical violence, but the passive violence, which is the kind of violence where we don't use any physical force, but yet we hurt people directly or indirectly. And it is that passive violence that fuels the fire of physical violence. So logically, if we want to put out that fire of physical violence, we have to cut off the fuel supply. And since the fuel supply comes from each one of us, we must become the change we wish to see.
Excellent, excellent advice. We've been speaking with Arun Gandhi, who lived with his grandfather Mahatma Gandhi from 1946 until his assassination in 1948. Arun Gandhi's books include Legacy of Love, My Education in the Path of Nonviolence, and the just released and beautifully illustrated children's book, Grandfather Gandhi. Arun, thank you very much for coming on Talk Nation Radio.
Thank you very much, David, for having me on your show.
Sixteen military wives, 32 softly focused, brightly colored eyes, staring at the natural tan, 32 gently clenching wrinkled little hands. Sorted, wretched, checkered lives. Will they find the solution in time? Using their 15 pristine, moderate, liberal minds. 18 academy chairs, out of which only 7 really even care. Doling out a garment of fine, celebrity minds. Kings, wondering blindly what the day.
goes la da 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 la da 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 la da 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 da.
Did you hear them talking about it on the radio? Did you try to read the writing on the wall? Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? It's like deja vu all over. Day by day, I hear the voices rising, starting with a whisper like it did before. Day by day, we count the dead and dying, ship the bodies home while the networks all keep going. Did you hear him talking about it on the radio? Could your eyes believe the writing on the wall? Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? It's like deja vu all over. One by one, I see the old ghost rising, stumbling across big muddy where the light gets dim. Day after day, another mama's crying, she's lost her precious child to a war that has no end. You hear him talking about it on the radio? Did you stop to read the writing at the wall? Did that voice inside you say, I've seen this all before? It's like deja vu all over again. It's like deja vu all over again.
The sun is rising, most definitely. A new day is coming. Ooh, ooh, people are changing.
to see the heathen lie. Love, love is the answer. Ooh, and that's all right. So don't you give up now. Ooh, so easy to find. Just look to yourself. In your mind, crystal blue persuasion. Crystal blue persuasion, crystal blue persuasion. Maybe tomorrow, when he looks down on every green field, crystal blue persuasion. Yeah. That's all, folks.